right, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to another round or episode of the Extra Rounds Podcast.
Just go with it, man. You should go. You should say, welcome to another round of the Extra Rounds Podcast.
Too many rounds.
Your mind and body wants to do it. Let it do it.
So, as you can tell, our setup looks a little bit different this week than normal. We thought we'd try something different. It's been a year of the show. We've been behind that desk for a year, so we thought we'd do something a little bit more casual. We don't have a guest until later in the show. Professional Fighting League's Carlos Silva is going to call in and talk about their event in Everett, Washington this weekend. But before then, we were just going to kind of have a little fireside chat with talk about UFC 214. We got a big screen up. We were watching all the comments. So if you have any questions or things you want to talk about UFC 214, let us know in the comments and we'll make sure to do our best to answer them. Otherwise, you can just listen to the sweet, silky, smooth sound of Elias's voice as we talk UFC 214. So three title fights right off the bat. This is arguably the most stacked card of 2017, if not one of the most stacked cards of all time.
That's pretty great.
I think it's hard to find a card that compares. Maybe UFC 205,
sure.
You know, UFC 200, of course, was incredibly stacked, even though we lost the John Jones DC fight that we're now going to get for this card.
Right,
so,
right.
First of all, what's your impressions on this card? Where will this card be remembered in UFC history?
It all depends on how the fights go, right? But on paper, it's phenomenal. On paper, everyone involved, the fighters who accepted the fight, the matchmakers, the UFC did a great job of putting it together. So, right now on paper, it's up there with any of them, UFC 100, 200, 205. It's a great card, but there's a whole other category, a much more important category in terms of fight cards and the memories they created, right? And so that's all yet to be determined.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be compelling, and I think everybody's still kind of bracing for the worst with this card.
Oh, I sure am. When I was getting our notes together last night, you might notice one of the categories I had at its own separate category was, do we want to prognosticate on whether or not John Jones versus Daniel Cormier 2 will even happen. Specifically, will John Jones make it to fight night? I know back in UFC 200, we were out there in Vegas at the time, fight week, doing interviews, doing all that good stuff. It seemed like it was obviously fait accompli. It was not. John Jones was not able to make that fight. So, yeah, so we still have to brace ourselves for the possibility that John Jones won't make it, I guess, theoretically.
And this is the fifth time this fight's been booked.
That's crazy.
UFC 178, and I think an injury to Jones delayed that. Then they fought at 182.
Right.
Then they were booked for one.
Cormier had to pull out once, too.
Yeah, Cormier pulled out. I think that might have been UFC 197 when he fought OSP. Then they were scheduled at UFC 200, and then
that's right.
This one. Hopefully it happens. As we saw earlier this month even, we saw a fight get pulled out hours, minutes before the event started. So I don't know if you ever feel out of the woodwork when it comes to this. So
you gotta keep that. You gotta keep the champ or ex champ in a bubble. Till then. No problems for John Jones.
I mean, this is a fight that's, you know, been in the back of your mind, MMA fans' mind, for 2 years. So there's three title fights on the card: mm-hmm. Jones Cormier, this light heavyweight title fight.
Yeah.
Could realistically be an unifying fight because
sure.
Jones never lost the belt. Well, then he had the interim belt, and then he got stripped of that one.
Spiritually unifying. Yeah.
Right. Maybe a lineal thing.
Yeah, then, exactly. It is, yeah. That's right.
Damian Maia is challenging Tyron Woodley for his welterweight title in the co-main. Cyborg is fighting Invicta FC bantamweight champion Tanya Evinger for the featherweight championship, which was stripped and removed from Jermaine Duronomy. So, should that Cyborg fight be the co-main? They gave it to Woodley and Maia, which follows the traditional weight class structure. But should they have given it to Cyborg?
I wouldn't make any bones about doing that. Like you said, it's what mostly happens in terms of the heavier weights being, you know, taking precedence, which you can make an argument that's bad. I mean, Tyron Woodley, Damian Maia is a more competitive, intriguing match. But for the shortness of their notice, right? Like Damian Maia had probably like a 4 or 5 week camp or something insane like that for this level. You know, I would say that's a more dramatic fight. It's a more compelling fight in that it's probably going to be more competitive. You know, the UFC, you know, finally the UFC is going to have a featherweight fight with the lineal on that topic, the lineal world featherweight champion, longtime world featherweight champion, Chris Cyborg Justino. But their whole foray into the division so far, and they're very late to that division, has been really fraught. Like, they had a ridiculous, not because the women weren't amazing fighters, they are, and it ended up being a good fight, but a ridiculous in terms of it being a title fight, a ridiculous title fight between two bantamweights, Jermaine Durandamy and Holly Holm. Somehow that was for the featherweight championship. It didn't involve the most undisputed, longest reigning champion in all of MMA. So now they cut Cyborg out of that. So now Cyborg's fighting a very good fighter in Tanya Evinger, who's not even a featherweight. So it's like, no, I'm glad it's happening. I'm glad the champ is finally in the UFC fighting in a championship fight, Cyborg that is. But no, I'm fine with it just being on the card, like underneath the other two, personally. I don't know. I'm sure the two women would say different.
And we have a lot of new viewers who've joined in on the Facebook live stream. If you're Welcome. Watching and you want to join the discussion about UFC 214, which we'll be doing for a while, feel free to comment below with a question or thought. We'll read it on air. We'll discuss. We'll answer. Otherwise, we'll just keep talking. So out of the three title fights, which one are you looking forward to the most? Is it the Jones-Cormier, or is it a matchup like Tyron Woodley and Damian Maia, powerful striker with a wrestling background people forget about, versus the grappler or Cyborg against former champion? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a tough one for me between Jones-Cormier 2 and Damian Maia Woodley. I would say in some ways, and this is totally just parsing and splitting hairs here, but in some ways in this moment, for whatever reason, I'm maybe looking more forward to Cormier Jones than the other two, than Woodley and Maia. If this is weird and it's finicky of me, and maybe I'm wrong to think this. If I feel Damian Maia Woodley, especially Damian Maia, because I would imagine he's known about this fight for less time than the champion did. I think that's a rushed, in a weird way, it's a rushed fight. Like, it's a fight that should have happened before, but this particular camp, Damian Maia was not given very much time to prepare for, at this point, the new biggest fight of his life. So I'm a little worried, if I want to use that word, that even though I don't have a real favorite in that fight, I'm real worried that Damian Maia is not going to have been able to give himself his best chance in a short training camp for Tyron Woodley, who's much younger, much stronger, much quicker, as a reigning champion. So for that reason, I think maybe Jones-Cormier, with all its drama, and I think might be, I don't know, I'm just looking forward to more. I think it has a chance to be a really close fight. I think a lot of people forget how competitive the first fight was. Jones definitely won 4 rounds in that fight, so, you know, he clear winner, nothing disputed about it. But most of the rounds are very competitive. And it was like flipped on its head, too. I remember watching it. I'm like, oh, crap, I can't believe this. Daniel Cormier, the much shorter man, is winning the exchanges at length. He's winning the outside exchanges. Once they got into the clinch, where we all assumed he had to get, two-time Olympic wrestler, John Jones controlled him there, the long, record-breaking, reach-having champion. So it's a weird fight that could go very similar to the last one, in my view. It could go completely different. It could be a slightly different. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I think I'm looking forward to that one the most, but it's a hard one to pick. How about you? What are you looking forward to the most?
I think it's easy to look forward to the Jones-Cormier thing because, as we talked, this is the fifth time it's been booked, and there's, you know, it's arguably the most heated rivalry in the history of the UFC. And what's crazy to think about is it could all end this weekend. If Cormier doesn't win, there's probably not a third fight. And I think we're looking at the conclusion of this and trying to find the next storyline to follow. And I think there's so much about that fight that's compelling. There's the genuine disdain, all the various press conferences and, you know, promotional things they've done over the years to promote this fight has made it intriguing. And for me personally, I think Jones' storyline for redemption and substance abuse is personally interesting to me. And it's been interesting to watch John Jones transition over time. You know, the first time they were scheduled to fight, he was still trying to cling to this green, clean image.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of abandoned that.
Yeah.
And he even said that on the conference call on Monday, that it was freeing to not have to worry about having that persona and being able to be the bad guy.
I bet it is. Yeah.
And, you know, so I think there's just so much about that fight that's compelling outside of the cage, let alone inside the cage. This is a guy who's undefeated with the exception of the Hamill
Right.
That's no contest, I think it was.
Or he lost.
Or they gave it a loss. Disqualification.
Yeah. It's a weird bad
that
decision.
One.
Yeah.
Or and Daniel Cormier's only ever lost to Jon Jones. Like, these are two people who could be remembered as the greatest. And Cormier has so much legacy of his legacy riding on this fight. Sure. And, you know, so outside the cage, it's compelling storylines. Inside the cage, it's an intriguing matchup. You know, Tyron Woodley, Damian Maia, I think, isn't going to be as exciting as people want. I was talking to somebody about it, and they were talking about Damian Maia doing better against taller fighters versus shorter fighters like Tyron Woodley, and they think that that, coupled with his wrestling ability, might give Woodley the edge. So I think that's really intriguing as well. We do have a couple people chiming in.
What you got, guys?
We got Ty O'Keefe against a more well-known opponent. Cyborg would get co-main status, not against Evanger.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, if it was Jermaine Durandamy, you know, who was willing to defend, though she doesn't seem ready, even though I think she got a fight booked recently.
Did she?
I think so. Or
that's crazy. I mean, maybe. I have no clue. At least you could make the argument it warranted. I don't think the UFC would give her co-main status.
That
would
have been a different fight to book. I mean, even though Tanya comes in as the Invicta Bantamweight champion, so you can make it this, like, champion thing. Sure. They're two Invicta champions. But I think Cyborg Jermaine would have been much more of a champion versus champion.
I think Megan Anderson, too, would have been a good one. So.
Yeah, Megan Anderson
the original scheduled opponent.
And that's
what
they wanted, and I think that would have been compelling. And that, when she pulled out, that might have been what forced change the lineup or the order of the lineup.
Did it? Yeah, that could make sense.
And you did mention Maya's timeline knowing about this fight.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard people say that they felt that they heard, thought Maya only got 3 weeks notice. I think it was like a month before the fight that
the announcement was announced.
Woodley was teasing this announcement that he knew, I think, way back even the end of May.
Yeah.
Was teasing that he knew, but he couldn't tell people. He did a Fox Sports procast thing about it. So
that's believable.
Whether he's known for a while at the very least. Right. So who knows how long Maya's known?
Right.
If he found out when everybody else found out, or if they told him in advance, I'm assuming he knew at least a few days in advance of that announcement.
Sometimes they don't always let fighters know what's happening, like with Demetrius Johnson or Miesha Tate.
We also have Christian timing in, a little off topic.
What's up,
Christian?
Do you
think that Lesnar versus Jon Jones happens, and who would win that fight? For those of you paying attention and have no idea what that question is, I haven't necessarily read for the source of the quotes, but somebody asked Jon Jones about fighting heavyweight, or he was talking about fighting heavyweight on one of the many media appearances he's done this week, and he said he would be interested. He said when he was fighting, if it was a champion fight, that he would wait for a champion who was kind of more in the 230, 240 weight class
he's
area.
He's got one now.
Which I think is Stipe Miocic is. I think he weighed in like 240-ish for the Dallas fight card. He doesn't want to fight somebody who's 265 pounds. And then he comes out after that and says he wants to fight, or he would fight Brock Lesnar. He would take that fight. And I think a lot of people were like, well, you're contradicting yourself. He said when it was going for a title fight that was his stipulation, so it wouldn't necessarily apply to Lesnar because he's not a champion. And I think this would be much in the way of McGregor-Mayweather kind of super fight that you would have to pursue. You know, this would be a main event on a pay-per-view, you know, unless they put it on some stacked card. Even if neither one of them were a champion, and I think those pay-per-view points would be enough to compel.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's something that,
mean very little now.
Right, if that's the main event of, like, the pay-per-view in October, then, you know, people will tune in.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Brock responded and said, anytime, any place. So there seems to be this genuine interest.
Yeah.
There's this, you know, the whole USADA pool thing with Brock Lesnar is obviously a hurdle. I don't think he's in
the not a hurdle.
It
wasn't a hurdle
It wasn't a hurdle the last time. You're right. And they've changed the period from 4 weeks, I think, to six.
It was months before. He
to 6 months.
Right.
Which would push it further down the line, but
But
he got an exemption last time what you're talking about.
Yeah, and these are fancy words for saying USADA works for the UFC. USADA is not an independent regulator.
Words to dance around.
Words that both. That's actually much better. Yeah. They use these words to dance around the reality, which is USADA, unlike what it says on its marketing material, is not an independent regulator. It's a tester for hire. And it works for the UFC. In this case, the UFC makes the rules. They've done it before. There's no reason to believe they wouldn't do it again. That's a crazy fight. Was it Christian that asked it, he said?
Christian.
Yeah. You know, the first time I heard about it was Dave Meltzer, probably the best business reporter in the history of mixed martial arts. From the Wrestling Observer, from MMAfighting.com. Check out his stuff. If you don't read Dave Meltzer, you got to read Dave Meltzer. He's great. But he was and he also has been reporting on pro wrestling for decades. So when these two things intersect, he really knows what he's talking about, right? He's the guy. Every reliable pay-per-view estimate for the UFCs that's ever come out is Dave Meltzer's been the one reporting it. So in any case, he said that they're working on that. If Dave Meltzer says it, then I'm assuming that there's a good chance that that's what they would like to do. I'll take that. For me right there, that's good enough to believe, like, oh, that information's good. Things could change. Maybe it won't happen. But if Dave Meltzer's saying that he's heard that they would like the UFC would like to make that happen, and they're working with whomever they got to work with, the fighters, the WWE, to make it happen, I'm sure at the moment that he said that is exactly what they were hoping to do. Other than that, there's no real hurdles. I don't think USADA is a hurdle. I don't think the WWE is a hurdle. Just by empirical evidence, they've been able to work with the WWE before. USADA is not a real regulator. And the fighters want it now, right? So
the fighters want it, yeah. Which is all the encouragement the UFC needs, right, to book a fight like this. You know, this isn't any other two fighters. This is the kind of fight, yeah, where two fighters express interest. The UFC is like, let's make this happen.
Yeah, right.
But the UFC also has something that the WWE wants right now in Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
She was at the Mae Young Classic supporting Shayna Baszler, former MMA fighter who's making a transition into pro wrestling. And there's a potential four horsewoman versus four horsewoman storyline, the Ronda Rousey four horsemen versus the WWE NXT, I think it was.
So I heard Ric Flair's daughter is a wrestler. Is she doing a four horsewoman? I don't follow it anymore. So is she doing a thing?
I think the timeline is that Ronda Rousey was doing her Four Horsewomen thing, and they didn't copyright or anything with it. And then the WWE was like, that's a good idea. And they had Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte Flair, who's a very prominent women's wrestler.
Okay, good.
She's
that's
one
cool.
of like the headline, you know,
oh, no
one
shit.
Of
that's,
the big names.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
As are the rest of the girls who made up this Four Horsewomen stable. Charlotte Flair, I think it was Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, and I'm drawing a blank on the last one. I don't watch that much wrestling.
They're popular. That's awesome.
Right.
Badass. That's
and they,
awesome.
I think this was when they were on NXT. They've all since moved to the WWE roster. And when Shayna, so Ronda Rousey was there for Baszler's thing. It was a 2-day tournament kind of thing. And at the first day, I don't think anything really happened. But then the second day, there was kind of like this confrontation between these WWE four horsewomen, and then Rousey and Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke, who were sitting ringside.
Oh, that's fun.
For that. So there was this kind of standoff to tease a thing, so that's something that's there.
And you're saying presumably to avoid any legal battle, Ronda Rousey would want to get the UFC's permission.
Yeah, like the UFC will be like, we'll give you Lesnar again, but we want Rousey for a WrestleMania match or something.
Yeah.
You know, this is all just speculation, not hyperbole.
No, it would make sense. It's so strange to me that. Like, would she have to get their permission to, become a carpenter as well?
I think
hilarious.
We don't think of it that way, but I guess, legalese, it's a competitor.
Well, no, I'm speaking legally. I think if anyone ever had the patience and the bank to fight it, I think they could. I've seen UFC contracts. They're pretty fraught. I think they've never faced any real challenge. And it's easier not to challenge it, I guess, you know?
And shout out Zach Freeman, who's watching.
Oh, cool.
Bellator. Fighter who was going up against Aaron Pico at the New York City pay-per-view card that everybody was counting it out. It was going to be their debut of Aaron Pico, the greatest prospect in MMA history, and he won in 30 seconds, if that. And if you missed that pay-per-view or you didn't spend the money, Spike's re-airing it Friday night.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
You can watch Zach Freeman's big win against Aaron Pico.
It was awesome. He stunned him, got the guillotine. That was – have we talked about this thing? Since he's watching, and thanks for watching. That's pretty dope.
Yeah.
That was such a favorable matchup for Zach Freeman. Everyone was assuming Aaron Pico, who's a phenomenal talent, a really great young kid, was going to smoke this guy just because they didn't know who Zach Freeman was, perhaps, unless they're really knowledgeable of the sport. I mean, I think Zach had, 10 fights going into this against a debuting guy? It's insane. He trains with, as far as I know, Freeman has trained over the years with guys like Steve Berger, Rodrigo Vaggi. These are real dudes with real experience. I think that was really bad matchmaking. Bellator wanted to pump up Aaron Pico, putting him against a guy that has 10 pro fights was kind of crazy in my view. Yeah, Freeman went out there and got his moment. I hope now he gets the credit he deserves. I hope he continues to get Bellator fights, because Bellator has a habit of grabbing people like that and like setting them up for something, or like a regional guy if they go to that area and never get really another opportunity. Freeman needs more Bellator fights. That guy can pop, and that guy has real ground skills.
Well, to go back to the booking thing you talked about, yeah. Mike Jackson, Mickey Gall for the CM Punk fight, is a great example. They took an 0-0 and a 1-0 fighter, you know,
yeah,
to go that way to fight an eventual 0-0 fighter. But, you know, Zach, like, he has momentum. He was the walkaway star of that night.
Yeah.
Like, if you walked into that fight not knowing who Zach Freeman is, you left knowing who Zach Freeman was. And he didn't win in, like, a three-round split decision or a three-round decision that was 30-27. He won in such impressive fashion that he left, like, a mental, I don't even know, an impression on everybody who watched. And I think Bellator needs to, like, steer into that. They need to get behind him and prop him up. And,
I hope
You know, fast track him up the rankings, co-main event, main event, you know.
Why not?
Steer into it. Like, you have something with Aaron Pico, but you've just been gifted a star in Zach Freeman. And, you know, so much Fallout coverage surrounded Zach Freeman, and Zach Freeman, rightly so, was very selective about who he was going to give
attention
to based on who gave him attention before the fight. You know, there was so much written about Aaron Pico, and that was, you know, a lot of the Zach Freeman content out there. So steer into the curve. Like, give this guy a main event.
Right? Go towards the people that win, right? Now, I'm not saying Aaron Pico can't be something great, but he probably shouldn't be having his first fights in Bellator even. They probably shouldn't be against people with so much more experience. You got a real guy in Freeman. You know, and Freeman, you know, all this superficial stuff, he's got too. He's got a good look. He's in great shape. He's a handsome dude. And he speaks well too, and he's on the mic. So, like, well, there's no reason not to promote him.
And the thing that he has that, like, so Conor McGregor is like this trash talker, and this is like everybody loves him now because he's a trash talker. But the foundation for what Conor is now, he wasn't, like, always a trash talker. Like, there was a little trash talking.
Was only a trash talker always,
but he was
right?
a talker, and he was – but the thing that people really gravitated towards at the beginning was that he was funny and he was humble. And
it was real.
Those are things that Zach – those are the same qualities that Zach had.
That's a good point.
Like, he – you know, he was up there, the post-fight presser. He was talking about his business and working out a deal with Viacom. You know, these are all those kind of things that, like, people latch onto and they can relate to. Like, this is a guy I can relate to, much like Conor with the welfare and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Great point.
And he's letting us know in the comments – Bellator wants to give him a big fight.
Good.
And they are taking care of him, and that's good to hear.
Well, that is good to hear.
Scott Coker, like, that's kind of what you expect out of Scott.
I would hope so. Yeah, I've never heard bad things directly about him from fighters. Zach, thanks for letting us know that. Also, come and let us know more. We'll have you on the show if you want to be, for sure.
Yeah.
We'll bug you. We'll bug you soon, and we'll have you on. Be great to talk with you one-on-one.
Yeah, so
or 2-on-1.
2-on-1. Yeah, don't leave me out of this.
That sounds weird and creepy.
We have Professional Fighters League's Carlos Silva calling in to talk about the Everett card this weekend. We kind of drifted away from 214,
but
hopefully you guys got a good dose of that earlier. But you know, that's still a few minutes away, so I wanted to kind of catch up on some of the comments. Angelo Reyes, former guest.
Angelo,
boxing and MMA coach extraordinaire, says that he likes the setup with the recliners.
Good.
And that he wants to tell Jeremy that he wants these for cage siders. We would like your cage sider set too. So
yeah, we could trade for a little bit.
The table and the TV, like, you know, there's a marriage. If we weren't so far away, we could
or we could trade locations once it gets winter here, and we could take the warmth of Vegas for a little bit.
There you go. It's a lovely time to be in Chicago. Then we have Kyle Walton, who says Tony Ferguson stated yesterday Habib turned down a fight in October for UFC 216. I don't know why I'm reading off my computer. There's a huge screen right there.
Yeah, it's so cool.
With some top fighters currently without matchups in one of the UFC's most exciting divisions, what do you think is next for the lightweight division?
I think we need two more interim champions. No, I don't. God knows. Hopefully, just if Tony was ready to fight in October, hopefully he'll wait till November. That's when Khabib said he's ready. I mean, honestly, I think Conor McGregor needs to fight either Tony Ferguson or Khabib next in the MMA if he's wants to fight an MMA after this boxing thing he's doing. And then the other person, the person that doesn't get that fight against Conor McGregor, the true lightweight champion, should be able to wait until the winner of that fight and then fight them. Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson have both earned title shots in my view. What will happen? I have no freaking clue. I wish I could. I wish I could pretend I'm a smart guy. Right now, there's just no telling what's going to happen with titles, especially in the UFC. I think Dana White has expressed interest in saying recently saying Ferguson and Khabib have to fight. You know, take that for what it's worth. Things change very often. Especially if it's stuff that the UFC president says, so you never really know. But, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen next. It looks like they've been eyeing the fall, and it looks like Khabib and Ferguson have just been talking about a month apart, October and November. October, November, it shouldn't be that big of a thing to surmount. Life is hard. Ferguson has to go without, you know, money, you know, until then, and so does Khabib. But if they're talking about dates and they're only a month apart, it shouldn't be too difficult to get. Now, what are they going to fight for? I don't know. Will it be an interim title? Will it be, I don't know what.
Well, Conor said he wants to fight before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Which means either the November Madison Square Garden card or one of the December pay-per-views. Mm. And I think at this point, like if you're Tony Ferguson and you're going to get the title shot if he comes back, you wait.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, is he going to come back? He says he is. And if he loses, I think he does.
Mm.
If he wins...
Yeah,
he stands to make more money boxing.
And if he comes, absolutely right. And if he comes back, when will he do it? Like you think, Mike, that if he loses, he'll come back? I mean, what if he loses by knockout? Is he going to fight in the fall again? He could. He wouldn't be very smart. So yeah, it's all up there. We don't really, really know.
It'll be interesting to see if it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
In the aftermath. Now, at the same time, like Tony, you'd say like if Conor's going to fight in New York. And you're going to get that shot, like, wait for that. But you don't know.
You don't know.
So it's like a gamble. And
it's a bad gamble,
That brings us to JC's point in the comments. You can comment, too, and we'll read your comment.
JC
he says, doesn't Tony take some blame for just waiting too long? Fans forget if you're inactive. And I think that's definitely part of the situation here. Mm. Like, he's at the – like, that's part of the thought process. He's at a situation where either he fights and he – cements that title shot, or maybe it's for an interim title, whether it's against Khabib or somebody else, you know, or wait. It's like, I don't want to take a fight and then maybe pass up the opportunity. Like, if you take a fight and you get booked in September on, like, the September pay-per-view or the October pay-per-view, and then Conor comes back and, you know, they announce that fight, and then Conor comes back and he's going to fight in Madison Square Garden, and then, you know, they booked you against somebody like Kevin Lee, and now Khabib gets the shot or whatever. You know, that presents, like, an issue. And, you know, And as much of it is on him for waiting to find out what's going to happen, he doesn't really – like, he can't really not wait either.
I agree with you, Mike. Let's be – what does he have, 8 or 9 straight fights that he's won? The fact that Tony Ferguson has not fought for the world title is 0% his fault. He couldn't be doing more in the octagon the last time he showed up, and his opponent couldn't make it. He even – did something that I wouldn't have done, which is fight Khabib instead of waiting for the true champion. He took that risk, and that still couldn't pay off for him. He still couldn't even get his hands on Khabib because Khabib had his health issues. None of this is Tony Ferguson's fault. I mean, I wish these guys were paid enough and ladies were paid enough to actually wait around and not have it hurt them. So it hurts them much more, and certainly fans forget about you, I guess. That's a fan's fault, and I don't think the reason he hasn't gotten the fight is because – fans aren't clamoring for it. I mean, he's earned the fight, and like you said, there's just so much to risk in losing it. One fight loss, I'll tell you who'll forget about you. Dana White and the UFC will forget about you. They won't give you a title shot, even though you'd won 8 or 9 in a row prior. So it's a tough. I don't envy that position that he's in.
People liked what you said. You got a lot of likes going across the screen. It's interesting to watch us doing this
in real time. Huh?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for liking.
You got a lot of
guys.
Likes. One comment. Which won't require much discussion before we check in with Carlos Silva and see if he's ready is Josh Hill saying that the setup looks really cool. Only question is Mike going to play a piano solo before the end of the show?
This is a piano man. I think Josh Hill looks pretty cool. I think Mike should play a solo every episode.
I don't have musical talent in my body at all.
We got a mixer. Should at least bring in a drum machine. We could drop
I feel
some
like
beats.
I could be like a Simon Cowell. Like, I feel like I could issue judgments on music. I just don't have any ability. Like, I feel like I
neither
can.
Neither does Simon Cowell.
Yeah, I feel like exactly. That's like the role I can play. Like, I can pass judgment on it without, but I don't have any musical talent. So I think we have Professional Fight League head honcho Carlos Silva on the line. Carlos, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. From what I understand, you just landed at the airport in Everett heading to the event.
I did, actually. I just got to the arena. I just pulled in.
So this is a big card. This is, the second card since the Pro Fighting League switch. What has this whole process been like? What's the response been like for fighters, for the fans watching?
Oh, I think everyone's excited. I mean, Daytona, I think everyone saw the, great show in Daytona. It was interesting, almost like a Winter Classic style event with the stadium and the stadium at Daytona. And now we're coming back to Everett. World Series of Fighting was here a little over a year ago. We had a great, exciting stadium, a great crowd. I think there's a great card. Andre Harrison's undefeated. He's going to try and stay undefeated. We got some veterans like Yushin Okami and Jake Shields on the card. And, there's been a lot of buzz about Justin Gaethje in the last few weeks, but Luis Firmino sure fought an amazing fight at the Garden against Justin Gaethje before getting it stopped because of his eye getting swollen shut. Yeah. But he's a really tough fighter, and he's on our undercard, which I just think shows how strong the whole card is overall.
You mentioned strength, and I think a lot of people view MMA organizations in different leagues, but we've seen somebody like Eddie Alvarez come from Bellator and win a title, or when Strikeforce came over, all those Strikeforce fighters going on to win titles, and Justin Gaethje is kind of like the latest example. How much credibility do you think that gives to World Series of Fighting or Professional Fighters League now? Hey, our guys are amongst the best in the world, and look, they can compete with the best in any organization.
Oh, look, I think we always said it and we always knew it, but sometimes those things have to happen. Really, we're really proud of Justin. He fought a great fight on a big card, as the headliner, which is always, can be nerve-wracking, but I think he responded well. I mean, it was certainly not an easy fight. Both fighters really fought their hearts out, and Justin got a great win. I think it shows the kind of fighters that we've got in Professional Fighters League, and I think that's why if you look at a guy like Andre Harrison, who's also undefeated and is just on a great roll, I think there's a lot more where that came from. So we're excited about it.
Carlos, this is Elias. Thanks for being on the show. I'm definitely interested. I've been watching World Series of Fighting since you all started. Always have had great roster of elite fighters as well as some prospects. And this change, the branding and structure, that you guys are doing, or certainly has me interested. It also has me curious, and I bet a lot of the fighters are really excited about this $1 million divisional like jackpot after a Grand Prix available. I'm interested in the nuts and bolts of that. How did you guys make that happen? Like, was it a new investment came in? Was it sponsors got involved? I mean, that's a pretty noteworthy thing to have available for fighters in a sport like MMA.
Well, we took our time. We brought in some additional investors at the beginning of the year. We all kind of put our heads together. We've had a great crew over the last 5 years of World Series of Fighting. But we looked at all the leagues and we looked at really how MMA needed to not just be a promotion, but really needed to be a sport in a league. And I think that's really the most important. In some ways, the important word in the new rebranding is Professional Fighters League. And we looked at a bunch of leagues. We looked at everything from the NFL to NASCAR to the PGA Tour to World Cup skiing to March Madness. And we tried to take the best of each and really understand what the fighters needed and what the fans wanted, and came up with this format, 7 weight classes. Each of the fighters will fight during the regular season. There'll be 12 fighters in each weight class. And based on wins and losses and points and submissions and knockouts, the top 8 fighters in each weight class will advance to the playoffs. Everyone understands a regular season and a playoff format, certainly in America. And those top fighters will get put into a bracket in the quarterfinal March Madness style bracket. That'll be the first round of the playoffs. And they'll fight. They'll fight in the quarterfinals and the semifinals. And 2 will emerge in each weight class. And those 2 will fight for the championship, $10 million in total prize money and $1 million to each of the winners of those 7 weight classes from 135 to heavyweight. So it is, we think it's unprecedented. We think it's exciting, whether you're an up-and-comer, a veteran, or you've just been in the sport, you know, working hard at it, a lot of people have not had an opportunity to fight for $1 million. So we think it's going to be exciting.
Carl's two follow-ups on that. Thanks for breaking that down. I wasn't, I didn't know the details of like the points adding up to determine the playoff entrance, which is kind of cool. And I think people will, at least in the States, that will be kind of intuitive. It's something we're used to. One is the, are you guys planning several seasons, so to speak, or years out in advance with what you're already working with budget wise or whatever, or will a lot to whether or not you do it again, really depend on how things shake out with this first go around? And then also, I was curious. I know I remember back in the day with the International Fight League, they had a team concept. It's not at all the same, but it's a little more similar to what the UFC does. And there was an issue of fight frequency, right? Like if you're fighting through a tournament throughout a year, you've got to probably going to fight more often than fighters or other organizations will do. How are you guys going to planning for contingencies like fighters getting injured and being unable to go in the next round or, you know, something like that?
Well, that's a lot of questions.
I'll repeat them again for you. We'll go one at a time.
We're not, this isn't a short-term plan. This is a long-term plan. You know, we put it together. Look, any new league structure, there'll be adjustments, there'll be tweaks here and there, but it's definitely a long-term plan. Season one will start in January. In terms of, you know, getting the fighters their fights, we actually thought that was one of the benefits of going to this league structure. Fighters would know how many times they'd fight a year. They'd know their minimum fights. They'd know their maximum fights. And they'd be able to gauge their year, so they'd really know that coming out of a fight, what kind of rest they would be able to get and how long it would take for them to get ready for their next fight, as opposed to really in the MMA world now, you sort of fight and you're really not sure when you're going to fight next. If you won and you had sort of a good outing, you might fight again quickly. If you won and you didn't have a great outing, you might not. It's hard to say, and it really depends on how the matchups come together. And so we thought that consistency was going to be great for fighters. We also thought it'd be great for them in terms of understanding, you know, sort of their walking around weight and their weight cutting that they need to do to make weight and to try and keep, you know, to keep some balance and consistency there. And so those are all things that went into to putting the league structure and the regular season and the playoffs together. In terms of injuries, you asked about injuries. Look, injuries happen in every sport. Injuries certainly happen in MMA. It's the toughest sport on the planet. I think the fighters are the greatest athletes on the planet. Once you really, you know, see them and get to know the sport, you really understand what they're doing as athletes, you know, as endurance athletes, as you know, multiple discipline athletes, as athletes that can run and jump and spin and have great hand-eye coordination. You know, it all goes in there. So injuries will play into it. We have some plans. We do have plans around how some of the points and how alternates would come into play if they're needed. And some of that, you know, we've sort of got that etched out on the whiteboard, and we've got our plan for year one. And I think like any good league, you'll stay light on your feet and make sure that you take care of your fighters and your athletes and certainly give the fans the best show. And if we've got to make some slight adjustments along the way, we will.
And part of the original plan was, I don't know if you mentioned this, I'm sorry, was a regular fighter pay on a month instead of per, like a salary instead of per fight. Was that right?
It's actually a mix. The fighters will still get paid during the regular season in a traditional format in terms of show and win, but then they'll also get a monthly stipend.
That's something rather unprecedented that I think is a huge help to a lot of fighters.
That's going
to
be, yeah, they're going to appreciate that for sure. Absolutely.
And I guess the one other thing that I had about the tournament is, you know, after a champion's crowned going into the second season, is it like in the NFL where it's like a clean slate and everybody's starting over, or is there some kind of leg up that a champion gets?
No, that's correct. It's a clean slate. If you're if you win the 145 2018 championship, you will forever in time be that 2018 world champion. And when you go fight in 2019 or 2020, you'll still be referred to as the 2018 champion, but you'll have to go earn that next yearly championship, just like the Yankees or the Patriots or anyone do.
So a guy like Andre Harrison, he comes out, he's undefeated, he wins the belt in impressive fashion. What was his response like when you were switching to this format and he was, I don't want to say he lost the opportunity to defend the belt because he's, you know, he's still fighting for this number one. It's like it's a title defense without being labeled a title defense. What was his response like when you were making the transition?
Yeah, I think we sat down and we talked about it. He wanted to get a fight in this year, sort of to keep his rhythm and, you know, to show everyone that he's a true champion. But I think he's excited about the 2018 season. I think, you know, his response was, you know, really, I'm going to be fighting for $1 million next year. And we said, yeah, you are. And he said, okay, well, I think I can sort that out.
I think I can make that work. I can find some time to make $1 million fight work into my plans.
That's right. That's right. I think we all would.
Well, looking up at this card, you know, there's a lot of notable names that I think MMA fans would find on this card. What fight are you looking forward to the most in particular?
I'm looking forward. I said it a little early. I'm looking forward to seeing Luis Firmino back in the cage. I think his fight with Justin at the end of last year was just a spectacular fight, and so I'm looking forward to seeing him. And you know, by the way, you know, same for Jake Shields. I mean, Jake always brings it. He's really a legend, and you know, him and John Fitch had an excellent, very, very technical fight also in New York when we were there, and so I'm looking forward to seeing Jake too. And look, I mean, I whenever you have an undefeated fighter like Andre, I think it's going to be great to see if he can keep that undefeated streak going, and we hope he does, and yeah, we hope he brings his A game, as I'm sure he will.
Carlos, was it? And yeah, you guys, either one of you can correct me if I'm wrong. But didn't after his previous fight, Jake talked about possibly no longer fighting anymore? Is that correct? What was involved like with him coming to you and saying, "Yeah, I want to keep going," or not? Or am I remembering that whole thing incorrectly?
Yeah, I don't think that was Jake.
Was it Fitch? Am I confusing? I thought it was. Yeah, I'm really confused. And okay, but yeah, I could have sworn, because when you said Jake Shields, my ears perked up. I was like, oh man, I thought he was considering wrapping it up for a bit. But no, I mean, if he's ready to go, in any case, he's a longtime veteran. It's going to be exciting to see him fight again. I don't know if you guys happened to see his last submission grappling match. He went up against Dylan Danis, one of Conor McGregor's main training partners, and looked super impressive there. So, yeah, it'll definitely be great to see him in the cage this time around again.
Yeah, yeah, he definitely seems ready. So it should be a lot of fun on Saturday night here in Everett.
So I saw a tweet from a pro fighters league fighter who said that he was starting a Twitter account because he was kind of I don't want to say being forced to, but he was advised that it would be good. And I don't know if that came from, you know, his coach or whoever, or if it came from Professional Fighters League, but it made me think, what do you guys work
maybe
with?
Maybe
it the
came
guy?
From Twitter.
Maybe it came from Twitter. That's also very possible. Twitter going out, you know, they're struggling. So them going out and getting people to come to their platform would definitely be
right
in the realm of possibilities.
Right. Something new.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, when you guys are working with these fighters, you know, how much emphasis do you put on social media with them in terms of marketing? Like, hey, you know, this is good for your brand, you guys need to be involved with this, this is a good thing for you?
Look, I mean, all of us have, you know, come from a digital background at some point in our lives, and you know, Professional Fighters League is about being digital first also. So look, it's a big part of everything we do, whether it's, you know, your guys' brand with the shows that you do, whether it's a professional athlete, like one of our fighters, or even what I do. I think it's a big part of how you represent yourself, how you get certain messages out, and how you tell your fans what you're up to. I think fans, you know, in MMA, I've seen it over the years, and I think it just continues to grow. I think MMA is the most social sport on the planet. 100% it is the number one social sport on the planet. The amount of buzz, the amount of chatter that's on social across all the platforms, incredible. So I think if you're a fighter, you've got to be out there. You got to be letting your fans know who you are, telling about your training and your fitness and where you're going to be fighting, what you're excited about, and just a little bit about yourself. I think that's part of being a professional athlete. So I think it is a big part of what we do, and it's a big part of what all fighters do.
And Pro Fighters League's always been one to kind of push the envelope in terms of development. We've seen the ref cam, the cage cam, I think it's been rebranded, which is one of the coolest things I think I've seen, where the referee wears a cam, if you haven't seen it, and it gives you a close-up of the action in the cage. Is there anything in the plans to try and integrate social media more, or any other new innovations that fans can expect to see at the Everett card?
Well, you know, I think a little more of social media is definitely on tap for this show. The cage cam's coming back for the third time this year. We really love the cage cam. We're going to keep that going. And I think you're going to see some new stuff like a telestrator as part of the crew that's taking care of the fights and looking at it. And so I think between those three and a little bit of extra social media, it should be a fun show on NBC Sports Network, and certainly great, you know, inside the stadium too.
Yeah, no, and I just wanted to correct, just for our listeners too, when I said Jake Shields earlier and I confused everyone, it's because I definitely was wrong. It was John Fitch that I was thinking about. After his fight in January, he had cited brain concerns and said he might step away and he was going to evaluate. And of course, he just recently fought. Yeah, last month as well. So it's a separate conversation. Same question for a separate, you know, conversation. But yeah, that was a confusion. I mixed those two guys up.
Got it. Yeah, they fought each other. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. For everybody watching, please make sure to tune into NBC Sports Network. You can see this. There's lots of names that MMA fans will know on this card. You have undefeated Andre Harrison, who's a rising star in the sport. Yushin Okami, Jake Shields, Lewis Taylor. That's a Chicago guy.
Yeah, Lewis Taylor is money. If you haven't seen Lewis Taylor fight.
Yeah, he's money. That's right. That should be great.
His last fight was a title fight for...
It's David Branch.
Against David Branch. Yeah. So the idea of how kind of deep this card is. There's other UFC vets on this card. We can go on and on down the list. So this is definitely a good event that's kind of, you know, it's free on TV.
Yeah.
That's the best.
You got to take advantage of that, guys. You got to.
Yeah, and then you also have legends like Boss Rutten and Randy Couture that are going to be there.
True.
Doing the show with us, along with Kayla Harrison, and then our own Ray Sefo. So if you're up in the Northwest, you know, come out and meet them too. They're going to be doing some autograph signings. It's going to be a lot of fun at the stadium. It's a great venue.
And that's the Xfinity Arena in Everett, Washington. Carlos, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon. Take care of yourselves.
You too.
We'll do. Great stuff.
It's a good card. It is a good card. If folks never really got in the habit of watching World Series of Fighting, it's understandable. There's so many UFC fights now, and if you're into Bellator, then you got that. But if you get a chance, if you're around, there's a card like this. It's not going to cost you a cent, and you have some really elite fighters and some really good prospects. It's worth watching.
The broadcast makes it interesting to watch. The cage cam is super cool. For the Daytona card, there was a finish where they were like switched to it.
Yeah.
So like you're watching from the referee's perspective. Or at least they showed the replay. I don't remember which it was, but that's like a cool thing to see, because you look at one angle and you don't see what the ref sees. Sure. And this way, you know, think about everything that happened at UFC Oklahoma with Michael Chiesa, and you know what Mario Yamasaki, reputation aside, saw when he stopped that. You know, you with his ref cage cam, they're calling it. It was ref cam. They changed it to cage cam. You can see exactly what the referee's seen, and
that's fascinating.
Different things from a different angle might look a different way.
Sure.
So.
They do cool things in production. I know you've been talking about that a lot since they were introducing some of it. You've been drawing our attention to it, and it's not nothing. It is interesting to watch. It does make it does add wrinkles to it that are worth watching.
And the $1 million prize, I think, is going to be super intriguing for a lot of fighters out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know that – I think it's been kind of interesting to see that it hasn't had quite the impact in MMA free agency.
Right.
As you would think that $1 million carrot would, because there's not many fighters who fought for $1 million. I think it's less than 15.
And,
you know, but so I think for some, when they see the first season, maybe after that, and they see people with the checks.
It'll be interesting. It'll be really interesting. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be something like the UFC, the Ultimate Fighter's six-figure contract, which is you're not going to get paid six figures for any one fight, but it'll like add up in total. So maybe like over the course of the whole year. I tell you, these professional fighters, league fighters are going to freak. Whoever wins these $1 million jackpots are going to work for it, because they're going to be fighting more often than most fighters at that level will be. And they're going to be fighting through more injuries as a result. So it is still a rare thing for even in a year for a professional MMA fighter to get $1 million. So if they can do this, stick with it, and then do it again next season and do it again. If they could do this every year, I think it will have an impact on free agency, right? Like, I think guaranteed money is definitely the way to go in some respects. But, yeah, I think if they can keep this going for a while, which is why I really was asking about the business model. In addition to just being our job, it wasn't just to be intrusive. It's like, hey, this is interesting. Are you guys, is it kind of like let's touch and go? Or are you planning for a long time? And, you know, he wasn't specific, but he's saying that he seemed to be implying that they're ready to go do this for a while. And I think you're right. If it happens for a couple seasons in a row, people might start thinking about going there as opposed to other big organizations they're in competition with. And it could really be a good way to distinguish themselves.
Well, before we wrap up, for those of you watching, I write for FanSided, Sports Illustrated. You write for Flow Combat. What do you have coming to Flow Combat that the readers can check out this week?
Thanks for asking, brother. I got a couple things. One thing that was going to be fun, we got a short write-up from last week's Extra Rounds podcast for a conversation with Kaitlyn Curran. We're going to have a short post on that before the fights on Saturday. So that'll be nice. If you hadn't checked that convo out, do it. If you read Flow Combat, check out the summary there. But also, we've got before Saturday, hopefully be coming out Friday morning, a longer form exclusive feature on Ricardo Lamas, former featherweight title challenger who's fighting at UFC 214. We got to spend some time with him at the start of his training camp, and it was really interesting. We talked about a lot more than just fighting. Talked about family, talked about history, politics, really interesting stuff. So I got that coming to Flow Combat before the fights. Check that out, flowcombat.com, Ricardo Lamas. I think it'll probably be one of the more in-depth features ever written on a really high-level guy who's been a title contender for many, many years. So hoping it's well-received. And, yeah, that's really the main thing coming.
Is somebody in Anaheim?
What's
one?
That?
Is somebody in Anaheim this one?
Probably. I know I'm
Dwayne.
Not. Yeah, I'm not sure, actually.
Well, you're here.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
This is not a hologram.
It's not a late thing. Yeah. No, hey, some people get so, like our friend Thomas Gervasi, he gets out there to fight weeks as late as he freaking can. He's done with all this other stuff. So some guys and girls still get out there.
I've done the fly in Saturday morning, fly out Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's right. You have. I remember talking to you on location one time. I'm like, you're a madman. So yeah. But no, I am here. I'm staying here as well.
It always seems like a good idea until you're in the midst of doing it, and then it's a horrible idea.
I got to the point, Mike, where I was taking like an extra day after because I'm like, I don't like to be away from home. But I've been away from home for a while. I'm going to sleep. I haven't slept in 8 days. I'm going to sleep. So the last few times I went out to like Vegas, I was there on Sunday. I did all my work there on Sunday, a whole nother day. I went like the opposite direction. I was like, I need to have like one day of actual sleeping.
As if a deadline isn't stressful enough.
Yeah.
Having to meet your deadline so you can leave and get to the airport and not miss your red-eye flight home.
I got tired of that. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So for FanSided and me, we have my Thursday tab out column. I do my questions with. We did it with Steven Wonderboy Thompson this week.
That's awesome.
So, he was gracious enough to take some time out and answer five questions, no more, no less. And that's it, pretty much. We have Jose Young's there, so he's going to be bringing lots of coverage from the ground. I'm sure Dwayne for Flow Combat's there. He seems to be at every event these days. So you can follow them on social media. Don't forget to follow him or me on social media, though, as well. Follow Extra Rounds at Extra Rounds on Twitter. You can subscribe in iTunes. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's on Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play. Anywhere you can subscribe to a podcast, you can find Extra Rounds. So please do, and please leave a review. Otherwise, we will just see you next week, streaming live as always on the Sports Illustrated MMA Facebook page, 3 Eastern, 2 Central, 12 on the West Coast. Thank you, guys.